Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, Dodgers, big series. You know, the more I looked at it, the more I was kind of like, well, it's not like a playoff series because the by the playoffs, the Dodgers will have presumably two or three or four of their starting pitchers back, or they will have traded for two or three or four frontline starting pitchers. Nonetheless, here we are, one of the latest first matchups of the season between these rivals in the NL West, the first place and one of the second place teams in the National League West. Padres and Giants trail the Dodgers by a game. Ryan, we got three coming up. Petco, there's going to be a lot of beat LA. Where would you like to start?
Yeah, I'd like to start with, I think, some concerns. Just like you just said, the Dodgers enter the series without a number of starting pitchers. Well, my goodness, so do the Padres. They're sort of patching it together with a bunch of four and five starters without a real contributor in left field, with a catching duo that's not necessarily hitting, though we saw a little bit of it in Milwaukee, and they're still not scoring runs. How concerning is that at this point? Despite taking two of three from the Brewers.
Yeah, no kidding. What they score, six runs. But, you know, you get two shutouts, you're going to win. But I think you're spot on. Like, now I keep saying, hey, how often can you expect that? Well, that was the Padres' 12th shutout, four more than any other team. And like you said, they're doing it patchwork. It's truly, truly impressive what Ruben Niebla, Mike Schilt are doing. And then, of course, what the players are doing, what the pitchers are doing. To answer your question, I don't know. And I think that's the concerning part, right? Now, if they were scoring 10 runs a game, we'd be asking, well, how can they keep that up, right? But yeah, it's a very interesting dichotomy or contrast. The Dodgers coming in with basically every National League leader. The top, they have like the, I'm going to exaggerate a little to make my point. They have the top five leaders in every statistical category in the National League in their starting lineup offensively, slight exaggeration. And then the Padres have the pitching, and the Dodgers are getting by and, you know, or whatever it is, 12 games over 500 without the pitching. It's quite the contrast. All I can say is I share your question that the Padres fans and the Padres should be and are concerned about this offense.
Right. The way they're playing, and again, you know, they describe it as playoff baseball. And that's a really nice way of saying 2-1, 3-2 kind of baseball games, right? But there is that tension there because they know, I mean, they're not going to play a whole lot of 11-9 baseball games. At least it doesn't seem like it at this point. You know, their path to victory is solid starting pitching and then do just enough. We saw that on Sunday, right? It was a 1-0 win. Padres got enough pitching, and Manny Machado, who does appear to be heating up, is on a little bit of a home run tear here lately, provides the only real offensive note with a solo home run. You know, to me, that's the concern here, because I don't think you can expect this pitching to hold up with those numbers. I mean, it'd be one of the great stories in the history of Major League Baseball if Steven Kolek and Randy Vasquez and Ryan Burgert continued to deal the way they've been dealing.
And to be able to do that while the bullpen is working so much. Now, obviously, over the course of this season, the Dodgers bullpen has worked like 15 more innings than anybody else and like 100 more innings than the, you know, middle team, the average. But lately, you don't have like Nick Pivetta, the last two plus start turns through the rotation. And by that, I'm going, you know, every five guys, and we're coming to the starting with, let's see, Randy Vasquez's start. So we have the last two pitchers of three turns through the rotation. Nick Pivetta has two quality starts. No one else has a quality start. You know what that means? That means that the bullpen is having to work a lot and they're just doing phenomenal. Now, it's kind of a bad example because the Padres offense did come back. Right on Saturday. Saturday, they were up 1-0, tied, went down 3-1, came back 3-3. Even though it was only three runs, that's kind of all you can ask. So it's a bad example in that way. But my example is this: they lost because the bullpen's not perfect, man. And they have used their high leverage guys so often because of these 1-2 run victories and 1-2 run losses that you had to throw David Morgan out in the ninth inning of a tie game. And that's odd. Like David Morgan, I know it's hard to like put this together with his numbers, but he's only had five appearances. Three of them have been unbelievable. One, he gave up a three-run bomb to the first batter he faced. And the other, he gave up a one-run bomb walk-off on the only pitch he made. But like, so the guy's been good, but he's not the guy that you're bringing in in the ninth inning of a tie game, unless you have to. And that's where when I talk about giving Ruben Niebla, Ben Fritz, the bullpen coach, Mike Schilt, credit. It's like the way that they have mixed and matched the pieces is incredible. But a part of the reason, to your point, and I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. I have no sleep. Your point about it being one of the incredible stories is, yeah, for Ryan Burgert and Stephen Kolek, and like Randy Vasquez is the veteran of that group. He's Methuselah compared to those two guys. And for them to go all season at anything like this, it would be, and then for the Padres to get through the season with Dylan Cease with a 4+ ERA and Nick Pivetta as their ace. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. And I mean, one, two, three of those things could happen, but it's not going to keep going like this. Like, I think you can be, history tells you, you can be relatively certain of that.
I think back to, I believe it was 2021, Kevin, the Mark Melancon year. If I can remember that, the Padres' path to victory that year was patching it together with a bullpen that was among the best in baseball during the first half. And what happened in August and then September when they really needed to win games, these guys were burnt out.
Every right? 2 or 3 days, Pierce Johnson and Craig Stammen were starting.
Right. Right. And that's, again, I don't think that the Padres are going back to that ever again. I hope Vince Velasquez isn't walking through that door at some point. But these are the real concerns when every night's a playoff game. Yeah. I mean, you can't have a playoff game every night, right? It can't be like this every night. And Mike Schilt, I think one of the things that fans really like about him is if a game is there for the taking, he often plays to win, sometimes at the expense of tomorrow. You can't do that every game either because the bill's going to come due.
Right. And when Mike does it, that it's possibly at the expense of tomorrow, he knows that. But we got a game in hand here, and that's what you do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have learned a lot from Mike that way. Not that I agree with everything, but like, well, I'll defer to him on the knowledge and and certainly the results. So, yeah, absolutely. And I do think that resonates with fans. Here's how I know that it's exhausting, besides that five other players told me it's exhausting. Manny Machado, in his on-field interview for Roku at the end of yesterday's game, said that it was tiring. By the time he got inside, and I've been through this with Manny, so I'll go ahead and tell you what he was thinking. Because when I asked him about it, which was always my intention, he said, no, it's fun. Manny had realized what he had said outside and decided, nope, we're not putting that out anymore, that we're tired.
Right. That's interesting.
That's just a little insight from, I know that fans can get caught up in everything these guys say is true if you want it to be true, right? Well, because like I'll report some and they'll say, well, that's not what they said. And I'm like, well, of course that's not what they said publicly. Well, yesterday Manny got caught saying something publicly, so then he changed his story. They are tired, man. And every team is tired, but not every team. Look, they have a plus 18 run differential for the season. I think the Phillies and the Mariners have less in terms of, or a lower run differential in terms of winning teams. The Padres are 10-6 over their past five series, which they're 4-0-1 in those series. They have a -2 run differential in that span. Now, it's a small sample size. What happens there is you get beat, you know, whatever it was, 14-0 in Toronto or whatever it was, right? Or I don't think I'm counting that in there, but there's some ones where it's a little lopsided, but that's kind of telling you the story of their season, and it cannot continue. And I hope we get to, like, what is the problem with the offense? Even though we've talked about it, I want to reiterate it.
Yeah, what is the problem with the offense, Kevin?
Thank you, Ryan. I am so glad you asked. Yes, left field. Yes, catcher. By the way, give those catchers some credit for handling those young pitchers, too. That's why the Padres are okay with having Martin Maldonado and Elias Diaz, one of them barely batting 200 and the other not quite batting 200. But yes, absolutely, there are holes in this lineup. You know where there are holes in this lineup? Lead off in number two. I don't care what is happening elsewhere if that's happening, okay? Mm-hmm. If the Padres are losing – And Luis Arraez is batting 300, and Tatis is getting extra base hits, and is batting close to 300. Either one of them is getting the job done on a regular basis with runners in scoring position, and the Padres are losing. I'll look elsewhere, and I'll say that's your problem. But since you and I have said it from the start that as the core goes, the team will go, I feel like I'm not just like adjusting history to fit it here. But these two guys right now, one of them 58 games in, that's Arraez, one of them 62 games in, are having the worst starts to their career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. And again, Arraez with a big hit at the end Saturday to tie it up. But those have been few and far between for him. It seems mildly concerning to me that he is having a very hard time running. He seems to sort of look at his hand a lot. That seems like a problem. So, I have no idea what sort of privately his health situation is.
I think the knee is the situation right now. I mean, he's playing DH that further hamstrings them. Yeah,
sure.
That further complicates things in terms of making the lineup, right? You're already mixing and matching every day over there in left field. And not that you wanted to put Gavin Sheets out there, but now you've got Gavin Sheets there and you don't have your best defense. Gavin Sheets has made some nice plays, but there's fewer combinations. You are playing shorthanded, and dang it, I just remembered Mike Schilt. And I've joked about this before. You could mention Manny Machado could hit four home runs and they could win 4-0 or 4-3. I'm going to make this worse. Manny Machado could hit 12 home runs. They could win 12-11. And you would ask a question about Manny Machado, and Mike Schilt would say, well, everyone played well today. But yes, Manny did well.
Right.
So one of the things Mike said yesterday, and darn it, I wanted to talk about this in the newsletter, is that it was a response to my question about the pitching staff. Well, all 26 guys. Really? Because I haven't seen Luis Camposano on the field in a week.
Right.
So what made me think of that is this lineup and the combinations that you're putting out there, they're playing shorthanded. All right. Mm-hmm. Like Arraez is playing hurt. Bogart's playing hurt to a certain extent, but I don't think as bad as Arraez, and Arraez is affecting where he can play. You're mixing and matching the left field. You're placing your two lefties, Sheets and Merrill, back to back in the lineup. Not that you're going to pinch hit for them now, but maybe you would for Sheets if you actually had, a right-hander to come in designated. But now you're not going to because he's playing first base. And, Camposano's sort of working there, but he hasn't played there. The more I think about it, it's kind of a mess waiting to happen unless some guys start hitting.
Yeah. And, you can't expect. Remember the lesson, was it 2 years ago or last year when we talked about you are what the back of your baseball card says you are, right?
Yes.
The back of Gavin Sheets' baseball card tells me that they can't count on him to hit 30 home runs and save the team, right?
Very well said, because I think he's better than the back of the baseball card based on adjustments, but I think you said it perfectly. Yes.
Right. The back of Martin Maldonado and Elias Diaz's baseball cards say that they're probably not going to become somebody they've never been in the second half of this season. Kevin, I'm looking at box scores from AAA. I'm looking at the El Paso Chihuahuas day to day. Outside of the East County guy, who we've talked about on this podcast before, I cannot conceive of any help that's coming from a bat's perspective. Yes, Trenton Brooks. Outside of Trenton Brooks, I can't think of anybody who's going to come save the day here. This has to be an external acquisition, doesn't it?
And if they thought it was Trenton Brooks, he'd be here. So, yeah. And he may. Well, every time I see him hit a bomb or whatever, I think, maybe, because now he bats left-handed, so he's not a threat to Camposano at this point. I'm 90% sure that I remember him in spring training. Obviously, I saw him in spring training. I thought, wow, this would be great. Gosh, I hope this guy hooks on somewhere. Don't really see a place for him in San Diego. So he kind of wasn't on my radar in terms of, but here he is still in the organization. And I mean, at some point, maybe he gets a shot. Yes, it's external. But again, Fernando Tatis Jr., who, by the way, hits well at NL West Parks, hits well against the Dodgers, hits well in June. So if you've, If you're watching him play and you're seeing how bad the timing is, but and you're looking for some reason to think he's going to pull out of a slump, well, I just gave you a few. Plus, he's Fernando Tatis Jr. and you know, generally does. It's going to be outside, though I don't have any names for you. And quite honestly, I don't know what the Padres have to give. I think they wanted to pull the trigger on a left fielder sooner than later, and they still may. But in the back of their minds is, are we going to need to go get a starting pitcher?
Right. And keep in mind, the Padres don't have necessarily money to splash around at the trade deadline, and they don't have MLB-ready prospects to acquire these guys. And so, you know, what do you do? Yeah. Right?
That's the thing.
The threat.
That's why I said I presented it as sort of, it's not an either or, but it's a somewhat of that because of the prospects in particular. Anybody that they're looking at, they're going to try to, they have enough money to try to fit in the last few months of their salary, or they can work in some relief in some way because they do have money coming off the books. Let's say they were going to get a guy who's not a rental, right? They've got some money coming off the books next year, a little bit more flexibility. But that's why I am sort of harping. And look, I realize when I start going off like I have on this podcast that, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were like, you know, everything the Padres did was like, yeah, it's okay. They're building for the future. So I realize the tone has changed here, but it's like, it's now. And the reason that I'm harping on what the guys on the offensive core have to do, the reason that I wrote fairly harshly about Dylan Cease after his last start is they don't have the flexibility for guys they're paying to not be good, or at least for multiple guys they're paying to not be good. And right now they're paying, and this, I'm not saying injuries are anyone's fault, they're paying Michael King, Yu Darvish, and Joe Musgrove a lot, right? And they're not there. They're paying Dylan Cease a lot, and he's not doing what he's supposed to, and they're paying Arise and Tatis a lot and Bogarts a lot, and they're not doing what they're supposed to. So, but you take a look at that game that they lost on Saturday, take a look at what the bottom of the lineup did. That hasn't happened a lot, but a few times that has happened. And the top of the lineup, now Arise had the 2-run double in the ninth, but the top of the lineup, Fernando Tatis Jr. is not driving anybody in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It's, you know, and I don't mean to make a June series against the Dodgers out to be more than it is, but this has been running through my head here lately. You know who's not going to be with the Padres next year? Let's make a list. Probably not Dylan Cease. Probably maybe not Michael King. Maybe not Luis Arraez, right? The bullpen guys who have been essentially found money. You can't count on relievers to repeat what they do year after year. Manny Machado is going to be a year older. Xander Bogaerts is going to be a year older. We're all going to be a year older, right? At some point, this is like the time is now. Talking about this window, we're in the window. This is the window. And they've got co-aces who they're not getting a ton out of because one guy's hurt and one guy's not been great. These guys all have, I don't want to say one foot out the door, but these guys are going to be very rich men a year from now because somebody's going to pay them and it's probably not going to be the Padres. That's, to me, the issue is, man, like this is the opportunity. And I know the Dodgers have spent a ton of money and have a ton of good players, but like this is the window and it may start closing after this year.
Well, you can look, you are correct. And at some point, how many chances do you get? Like 2023, they had a really good team and they didn't make the playoffs. And that killed people in that organization because they knew that they had a team that should have done better. Last year, Dodgers injuries, Padres were really good. Then came the 24 scoreless innings. That killed them because they knew, and everyone knows, have seen the quotes from the Dodgers. The Dodgers knew. So now here you are this year. You've got another good team. The Dodgers are being destroyed by pitching injuries. Now, I'm not saying that they aren't, they're expecting those guys back, but we don't know. And if you don't do it this year, Ryan, you are absolutely right. And then you could even look at it as three wasted opportunities. Like you built the team. We all can see the paths that these teams had and they didn't go down it. So yeah, if you, there is definitely urgency.
Right. Not to mix my sports metaphors, but it's like, hey man, you made the tournament, you made the Sweet 16, but They haven't gotten beyond that, right? Yeah. And this is the thing that they're going to have to improve on. Real quick, these Dodgers injuries, just to give sort of our casual listeners an idea. Roki Sasaki's been out for a month. Shohei Ohtani isn't pitching competitively yet. Tyler Glasnow, Blake Snell are on the IL. Even if we wanted to get further down, I was reading a story about this morning. Further down, Gavin Stone, Kyle Hurt, River Ryan, Emmett Sheehan, all hurt. Dustin May, Clayton Kershaw, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and a guy I've never heard of named Justin Robleski. Those are your Dodgers starting pitchers at the moment. And they're still in first place in the division.
Yes, because Shohei Ohtani leads the National League in OPS. There are two guys with 1,000-plus OPS in the National League. Freddie Freeman, the Dodgers' first baseman, and Shohei Ohtani, their designated hitter. And then Will Smith, their catcher, has a 914 OPS. He's fifth in the league. So, yeah, that is, and it's been this way for 3 years now, where the Dodgers' core is getting it done, generally speaking, where the Padres' core has struggled to do that a lot of the time.
Right. And when your core is playing great, you can overcome things like 4/5 of your preseason starting rotation being on the IL. Right?
Well, when you went 8 deep on your starting, I mean, let's the Dodgers have been hit and they deserve some credit for being where they're at. They also they're not playing the same game as everyone else.
Right. Right, right, right. They traded for and then extended Tyler Glasnow, knowing that he was arm surgery waiting to happen, and they don't mind.
To a certain extent, Blake Snell, right?
Blake Snell, knowing that Blake Snell, maybe not the kind of guy most franchises would throw that kind of money at, and they did. And if he's back in September, and if they're starting rotation in October, it looks like, you know, Glasnow, Snell, Yamamoto, Sasaki, Kershaw, man, that's yeah. We think they're good now. They could be really good when these guys.
That's why I say that. Like, this is now probably be a tone tonight of almost whatever happens. I'll let the game sort of dictate it. But it's like, this is big. This is great. These are fun. This is not the Dodgers that you'll be facing in October.
No.
And you know what? It very well might not be the Padres you're facing in October in terms of how they're playing or whatever. But like, in terms of personnel and what decides games in the postseason, a lot is pitching. And that's what I mean. This is not that Dodgers team.
Right. Tonight, Nick Pivetta, the Padres' de facto ace, pitching at Petco Park, which is good news for the Padres. Yep. Going up against Dustin May. Dustin May is 3-4 with an ERA just over 4 this year. There was a time when he and Walker Buehler were going to be the LA Dodgers frontline starters, and arm injuries just really have derailed both of their careers. Tomorrow we've got Dylan Cease versus TBD. It appears Dodgers have not made up their minds on that. And then heading into Wednesday, the day game, it's Robleski versus Randy Vasquez. I'd like to talk about Randy Vasquez for a minute, Kevin, because you mentioned him earlier. There are so many other newcomers who are pitching well. I think sometimes we don't stop and go, whoa, it appears this guy's turned a corner. You and I talked in games last year about, you know, the one thing separating him from being average and really good is consistency. And it looks like he's found a little bit of it.
He has. He's fallen back into the walks. And that's the thing about young pitchers, too. Just remember, like, that's why when we talked about it would be this great story, almost unprecedented, if Burgert and Kolek and Vasquez kept carrying him. When you're talking about a young pitcher, they're going to go through ups and downs because they're still trying to figure themselves out. They're going to fall into some bad habits. So Vasquez has started to get back into trying to be a little too fine, and he's walking guys. Now he's got the stuff, and when he locates that stuff, he can get himself out of trouble. Overall, the consistency has been like far better. And there was this long stretch of it where it was like, you know, but it really depends on who you talk to in the organization. He is what he is still. That's why it's just so amazing. He is what he is, and I'll defend that. Like, you aren't supposed to be asking him to be the guy to go out there and give you 6 shutout, right? Mm-hmm. But if what he is this more consistent guy who gives you a chance to win, that's what Randy Vasquez is here for. You could see these three guys, Pivetta and somebody else, in their rotation next year. And I don't know, as long as that somebody else was, you know, let's say Michael King going into this year, right? Mm-hmm. Yu Darvish, don't want to forget him, kind of don't want to count on him either. But what I'm saying is, like, these three guys, that's cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to be, you know, who, if you weren't running Bradley Vasquez out against Justin Robleski on Wednesday, you'd be thinking about that game a little differently.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Right. If he was going up against Roki Sasaki, let's say, or Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Yamamoto was pitching, right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a little different.
Who knows what Sasaki is? So yeah, we'll go ahead and throw him in there with everybody else. But, like, who knows what Sasaki is?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. He hasn't exactly delivered. I mean, it's the old...
Yeah, you know, yeah, getting used to the majors. I don't know what he is. Yeah.
Well, it's that whole unanswered prayers thing, right? I mean, I seem to remember the Padres going all in on, oh God, who's that outfielder for the Diamondbacks, the Cuban defector? Remember, you know who I'm talking about? Have we talked about it before? Yeah, Manny Tomas.
There you go. Manny Tomas.
You know, yeah. Everybody, you know, Padre fans cried when he went to the Diamondbacks and he was a quadruple A player, right? Maybe this is that. I still think Sasaki's going to be just fine, but maybe not.
I'm with you. I'm with you on the whole on that. I still think he's going to be fine. But what do we know, right? We know Glasnow and Snell can be, I mean, absolutely filthy, top of playoff rotation caliber pitchers when healthy. That's where I'll say, yes, man, the Dodgers have taken a huge hit there. Mm-hmm. They lost an arm in Sasaki, who had, I think he was having some good starts. But for a while, he and Randy Vasquez were jockeying for the walk percentage championship of the National League. So, and he's a young guy who they knew was going to have a time. But yeah, I'm a big believer in the whole unanswered prayers thing when it comes to off-season acquisitions, because that's what we judge things on. And it makes me laugh that, you know, man, AJ Preller's won a lot of off-seasons. Not sure where the trophies are. They keep the trophies for those are. I haven't seen the case there at Petco Park where they keep the trophies for that, but I know the one with the World Series trophies is empty.
Yes. No, that's 100% right. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of these, and I want to talk a little bit about, you and I had a text exchange late Friday night, and you sent me back a graph that shows how clustered the Padres' big three are, what, in the last three seasons, right? Xander Bogaerts, Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr. Who does that say more about? And if we can explain that a little bit, that I would appreciate some insight on that, because I was stunned. I shared that with six or seven other people within 5 minutes of you sending me that graphic.
Who does? That's a great question, Ryan. Like, who does it? I want to say it speaks more of Fernando Tatis Jr. in that we all have seen with our eyes that Xander Bogaerts has not lived up to expectations. And those were expectations, by the way, that were built on a good 7 years of being one of the more solid hitters in baseball. Mm-hmm. Like, when I say top 30 hitter in all of the major leagues, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that wasn't worth $280 million over 11 years, but you do not dispute that he was a solid, you know, hitter. So then to see that some of his numbers are just below and some just above Tatis, and that actually Manny's not all that much higher in a couple, is like, I think that speaks more of Tatis than it does of Xander. And it does also speak to the rest of us who expectations shape how we view things. And then, look, to be fair, if they had the exact same numbers, one of them has hit a bunch of big hits, and the other has not.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
And the numbers, go ahead.
The numbers we're talking about here, by the way, are batting average, on base percentage. You know, obviously Manny has a lot more home runs than, say, Xander Bogaerts does, and actually more than Tatis the last three. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about, you know, we're cherry picking some stats to prove a point a little bit. But my instinct was, I didn't think Xander Bogaerts was anywhere near them in these categories. And two, like, I'm surprised that Tatis maybe doesn't get more criticism, because he and Xander Bogaerts, at least in those, you know, very cherry-picked statistical categories, are sort of right next to each other, you know?
Right. And you're, Xander's helped a lot by his infield singles. But also, Xander has finished his two seasons here fairly strongly. As a matter of fact, 2023, very strong. And last year, good enough. So it's not like he'd been terrible this whole time. It's just that there's times he just looks like, wait a minute, like, was this guy ever good? And I say that in full reverence. That's what I'm saying is this guy was so good. And now so you go, huh? What? So, yeah, it's a really fascinating thing. I love stats. I love them because they tell a story, but without context, they also can cherry pick. I don't think that Tatis is as bad as maybe just looking at that says he has been. Remember too, he played on one leg for a good portion of last year. And in 2023 was coming back after having not played in the major leagues for a year. Now, at least one of those things is his fault, but you know, I want to say that too, that he hasn't exactly been healthy.
Right. And again, you know, tonight, let's say the Padres tonight have the go ahead or winning run on second base with two outs. Among those three, I'll tell you who I want up, probably Manny, right?
Well, without a doubt. I mean, without a doubt, especially right now. Yes. There were some times, right? I keep track of certain things. And man, there was a time at the beginning of the year where Tatis was creeping up on Manny's career war with the Padres.
Wow.
Right? Like real, like getting right there. It was like, I think because it goes Gwynn, obviously no one's ever going to catch him. Winfield, who Manny will probably catch. But Tatis was creeping. Last month, Manny's put some more separation between him and Tatis for two reasons. Manny's hot. Tatis is not.
Nope. That's a great point. Padres-Dodgers three-game series, 6:40 p.m. tonight and tomorrow, 1:10 p.m. on Wednesday at Petco Park. Kevin, I will let you go. Get down there. I'm sure traffic's going to be crazy. I'm sure the stadium's going to be a zoo. But this is what you get when the Dodgers are in town. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.